Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, Mario Ritter, Katie Weaver, and John Russell. Later, Ana Mateo will bring us this week's health report. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
President Donald Trump signed a new executive order Monday that bars travelers from six Muslim-majority nations from entering the United States. The temporary ban removes Iraq from the list of countries covered in a previous order announced January 27th. The new order bars travelers from Iran, Syria, Somalia, Sudan, Yemen, and Libya for 90 days. It also prevents all refugees from entering the United States for 120 days. U.S. officials said Iraq was removed from the list after Iraqi officials promised to increase cooperation with U.S. officials on vetting procedures. The new restrictions will take effect March 16th. They will not affect legal permanent residents, those with green cards, or travelers who already had valid visas as of January 27th. The new order comes after a federal judge in the state of Washington blocked the earlier ban in a ruling last month. Trump signed the order Monday in private. The order was announced jointly by Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, Attorney General Jeff Sessions, and Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly. Kelly said the order is meant to prevent enemies from using American freedoms and generosity to cause harm to U.S. citizens.
Today's executive order, which President Trump signed this morning, will make America more secure and address long overdue concerns about the security of our immigration system.
The original travel ban caused confusion at many U.S. airports when Homeland Security officials attempted to interpret how it should be carried out. Some travelers were detained before being sent back overseas or blocked from getting on airplanes abroad. The order quickly became the subject of several legal challenges. Monday's order left out an earlier requirement indefinitely barring Syrian refugees. Language giving preference to religious minorities was also removed. Critics of the original order questioned whether the Muslim-majority countries were targeted for religious reasons. A senior official from the Department of Homeland Security, or DHS, denied this on Monday. This is not a Muslim ban in any way, shape, or form, the official said. President Donald Trump has called for stronger vetting procedures to keep out dangerous individuals and terrorists. His administration has said some refugees, as well as immigrants and travelers from certain countries, could pose a security risk to the U.S. The White House released information Monday saying terrorism-related investigations were currently underway by the FBI, involving at least 300 individuals who came to the U.S. as refugees. When pushed for details, the senior DHS official did not comment further, but said the cases were truly an alarming number. With the latest order, the Trump administration is aiming to survive new court challenges. Attorney General Sessions said his department was committed to defending the order, which he called a lawful and proper exercise of presidential authority.
This Department of Justice will defend and enforce lawful orders of the president consistent with the core principles of our Constitution.
Groups opposed to the first order are likely to object to the new order as well. In a statement Monday, the American Civil Liberties Union, or ACLU, said the revised restrictions have the same fatal flaws as the original. U.S. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer of New York criticized the new travel order, calling it a watered-down ban. Despite the administration's changes, this dangerous executive order makes us less safe, not more. It is mean-spirited and un-American. It must be repealed, Schumer said. I'm Brian Lynn.
North Korea launched four missiles early Monday. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe said three of the missiles came down in his country's waters. He said they landed in Japan's exclusive economic zone, about 350 kilometers from the Japanese mainland. The launches are clearly in violation of United Nations Security Council resolutions. It is an extremely dangerous action, Abe said during questioning in Parliament. Also reacting, the United States said North Korea's provocations only serve to increase the international community's resolve. Our commitment to the defense of our allies, including the Republic of Korea and Japan, remains ironclad, said State Department Acting Spokesman Mark Toner. Toner added, "We also call on the DPRK to refrain from provocative actions and inflammatory rhetoric that threaten international peace and stability, and to make the strategic choice to fulfill its international obligations and commitments and return to serious talks." The North Korean missiles traveled about 1,000 kilometers from where they were launched in the northwestern part of the country. Their flight path suggests that they were not long-range intercontinental ballistic missiles, however. On New Year's Day, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un said his country would soon test an ICBM. The launches took place as South Korea and the United States are holding joint military exercises. The North Korean government says the exercises are reason for North Koreans to prepare for an invasion. Last year, North Korea launched missiles during the joint South Korean-U.S. exercises. The missile launches on Monday were not unexpected. Bruce Bennett of the RAND Corporation Research Group told VOA that the most recent launches may have been an attempt to pressure China.
This was a launch that was intended to defy the United States and South Korea for doing the ongoing exercises, but it was also clearly pointed at China.
Last month, China said it would suspend coal imports from North Korea. Coal exports are an important way for the North Korean government to earn money. Experts said China's move was to punish the North for the apparent killing of the half-brother of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Malaysian officials say Kim Jong-nam died after being attacked by two women at Kuala Lumpur International Airport last month. They have blamed the banned nerve agent VX for his death. Malaysia is seeking several North Koreans for questioning and has refused to release the body to North Korean officials. Diplomatic relations between Malaysia and North Korea also have worsened. North Korea has said Malaysia has not carried out a fair investigation. Malaysia has expelled the North Korean ambassador and has ordered its top diplomat in North Korea to return home. North Korea has increased activities in both its nuclear and missile programs since the start of 2016. It has tested more than 25 missiles during that time. In February 2016, the North launched a satellite into space using ballistic missile technology banned by United Nations resolutions. In reaction, the South Korean government approved deployment of the THAAD anti-missile system in the country. The costly defense system is designed to protect South Korea from the North Korean missile threat. However, China opposes the placement of the missile system near its borders. Russia also has voiced concerns. South Korean Prime Minister and Acting President Hwang Kyo-an strongly denounced the latest missile tests by the North. "Our government strongly condemns that North Korea fired ballistic missiles once again, ignoring continuous warnings from South Korea and the international community," Hwang said. He added, "It is a challenge against the international community and a grave act of provocation." South Korea remains in a political crisis. President Park Geun-hye has been critical of North Korea's banned nuclear and missile activities during her term in office. She has pushed for the THAAD missile system and closed the Kaesong Economic Area jointly operated with the North. But she is fighting impeachment on corruption charges. The country's constitutional court is now considering the case against her. If Park is removed from office, the country will be required to hold its presidential election earlier this year than planned. I'm Mario Ritter.
representatives of United Nations Security Council member countries visited a target of Boko Haram militants on Sunday. The diplomats traveled to Maiduguri, the capital of Nigeria's Borno state. They met there with women at a camp for displaced persons. The diplomats have been on a four-day-long trip to the Lake Chad Basin. They went to Cameroon, Chad, and Nigeria before going to Niger on Monday. On Sunday, the ambassadors arrived in Maiduguri under heavy security. 2 days earlier, three bombers died in a suicide attack near a fuel station. No civilians were hurt in the explosions. The diplomats met with the women in a camp where about 7,000 people live. They heard the women tell about their husbands being killed. The women also said they had been abused by Boko Haram. The militant group has been fighting against the Nigerian government and its forces since 2009. Deputy United States Ambassador Michelle Sisson was the only woman in the UN group. She has expressed support for women and girls in the Lake Chad Basin.
I'm hearing stories not only of these families and these women who have been victimized, their children victimized by Boko Haram, but then the protection needs, especially of the women and girls, not only inside the camp, but also if they have to go outside either for firewood or to seek some sort of income-generating activity.
UN officials say aid workers have yet to reach about 700,000 people in 8 local government areas. Officials say more than 5 million people in northeastern Nigeria are in need of food. At the camp for displaced persons, many people said they are not given enough aid to feed their large families.
We are suffering from food. We are suffering from hunger. Our children are dying for not to suffer for that. Sometimes, at the end of the month, sometimes I don't have food. I will manage to go and beg small.
The United Nations has warned that about 2 million people in parts of the Northeast could face famine conditions if donors do not intervene. Peter Lundberg is the UN Deputy Humanitarian Coordinator for Northeast Nigeria.
There is no famine right now in the Northeast, but we are really, really playing with the fire unless we continue to ensure that these people are getting steady assistance on a regular basis. And it is a struggle. Right now, the food operations here cost $1 million per day.
Lundberg added that countries must keep the promises they made at a humanitarian conference in Norway last month. Delegates there promised more than $450 million in aid to help people in the Lake Chad Basin this year. I'm Katie Weaver.
A new study shows that improving housing conditions may help in the fight against malaria at a time when other efforts may be slowing. The World Health Organization reports that more than 400,000 people died of malaria in 2015. Most of them were children in Africa. Study organizers note that African countries south of the Saharan Desert are developing faster than many other areas. They think architects and city planners can help in the fight against the disease. Insecticide products have been extremely effective in limiting the spread of malaria. They have chemicals that target mosquitoes, the insects that pass the disease to humans. Insecticide-treated bed nets and use of the products inside buildings have helped reduce malaria death rates by 40% since 2000. But experts say mosquitoes are becoming resistant to insecticides and new tools are needed to fight the disease. Lucy Tusting of the University of Oxford is an expert on the spread and control of disease. She says public health experts should use the move away from traditional mud and thatch homes to help fight malaria.
We do have an opportunity to tap into the changes that are ongoing in many parts of Africa in order to build healthier housing.
Tusting and other researchers wondered if the change in housing they had noticed could help in the fight.
What we're seeing in many parts of Africa is a subtle transition from more traditional housing, which might have thatched roof and mud walls, towards metal tiled roof housing with concrete walls.
That should help, because the mosquitoes mostly bite people in and around their home at night. Better design of homes, with fewer holes in the walls, could help keep the insects out. But until recently, there has not been much research on the subject. Tusting and her team examined health and population surveys from 21 countries. They found that children living in modern buildings were 9 to 14% less likely to have malaria than those who lived in traditional housing. That is about the same level of protection given by insecticide-treated bed nets.
What this suggests is that housing could be an important tool in tackling malaria.
This is not a new idea. Tusting notes that screened windows and doors were the first effective method used in the fight against malaria in the early 20th century. She says a lot of new housing will be built in Africa over the next several years. She believes those changes can be used to help further reduce malaria infections and deaths.
We can leverage those changes, but to do so, it's important that health specialists reach beyond the health sector and work closely with architects, urban policymakers, and national governments.
She says malaria prevention should become an important part of planning as African cities continue to grow. I'm John Russell.
From VOA, Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Many Americans have toasted bread first thing in the morning. For some, the morning meal also includes hash-browned potatoes. Or, later in the day, they might enjoy potato chips or crispy French fries. But if you like any of these foods cooked until they are dark brown in color, you might want to limit how much of them you eat. That is the finding of a British government agency. The Food Standards Agency is urging people to avoid eating burnt or very well toasted bread and deeply browned potatoes. The danger, the agency says, is when starchy foods are cooked until they are very firm or even burnt. The concern is a chemical called acrylamide. Acrylamide is produced naturally in food during cooking at high temperatures. It has been identified as a possible cancer-causing substance. New Scientist magazine reports that high levels of acrylamide are present in starchy foods, like potatoes, when they are cooked at temperatures over 120 degrees Celsius. British researchers note that acrylamide can also be present in breakfast cereals, cookies, and coffee. Steve Wern is the director of policy at the FSA. He says most people do not know that the chemical exists or that it could create a health hazard. The FSA launched a study to identify acrylamide exposure in the British population. Researchers found that most people are exposed to too much of the chemical. They said this contact could increase their overall risk of getting cancer. The agency even created an expression to help people remember. The FSA suggests people should go for the gold when they prepare starchy foods. Heating bread or potatoes to a golden brown, they claim, is healthier than overcooking them or burning them. Wern says the agency is not saying that people should worry about the occasional meal that's a bit overcooked. He said these suggestions are about controlling risk during one's lifetime. The agency is also urging people to eat fewer high-calorie foods like potato chips, French fries, and cookies, all of which have acrylamides. There are other things you can do to limit your exposure to acrylamides. Experts at New Scientist suggest that you not keep potatoes in the refrigerator. They explain that at low temperatures, an enzyme breaks down the sugars in the potato. These sugars can form acrylamide during cooking. They add that frozen foods don't have this risk. Sugars, like sucrose, do not break down at low temperatures. Another cooking tip is you can blanch potatoes before frying. Blanching is heating food briefly in water. This will remove the potato skin and half the sugar, resulting in lower levels of acrylamide. Scientists have launched other studies to better understand how acrylamide forms in some overcooked foods and how cooking traditions may affect people. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.